Well, radicalization is a complex process, and it involves both cognitive and psychosocial alterations of belief, values, and even actions of man.
Radicalization has been on the rise in Africa, with religious extremists operating in countries like Somalia, Libya, and Nigeria. There's also a lot of resistance army, LRA, a Christian rebel movement trying to establish theocracy in Uganda for decades, and IPOP secessionists in Southeast Nigeria. It is a very serious threat to society. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I'm Hausa Abubakar, your host. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, my colleague Hawa Shafi Inuhu will be discussing radicalization in Africa with a researcher in the field of countering violent extremism.
Hello, I am Hawa Shafi Inuhu, your co-host for today. In this episode, we will be discussing radicalization in Africa. Radicalization has led to a rise in violence and terrorism across the continent, posing a significant threat to peace and stability. Governments, civil society organizations, and even international partners have been working to prevent radicalization and promote inclusive, peaceful societies. But are their works impactful? Joining me today is Abdul Samad Ahmad, an expert in countering violent extremism in Nigeria. During the last episode, Abdul Samad was with me here in the studio to discuss extremism. Welcome once again to the Crisis Room, Malam Abdul Samad.
Thank you once again for having me.
To begin, can you explain to us what radicalization is and how it happens?
Well, radicalization is a complex process, and it involves both cognitive and psychosocial alterations of belief, values, and even actions of man. And it can lead that person to unleash violence. It's an alteration, or cognitive and psychosocial alteration of human belief, values, and even action for him to exercise authority over one another in what he believes. And it can lead that person to unleash violence on people.
Okay, interesting. So far from the explanation you've given, it seems that the process of radicalization has mainly to do with psychology and, you know, the mental processing ability of the person involved.
Exactly.
So how does this translate to violence, especially as we've seen in Nigeria and even across Africa?
Well, it leads to willingness use of violence to achieve one's goals. Because radicalizing a person has its goal. He is being radicalized to attain some certain goal. So he will be manipulated in such a way that that goal will be realized. So it translates to violence in such a way.
How do you think this radicalization manifests in society? Violence is one way, yes, but what are some other ways that it could manifest?
Well, the manifestation of radicalization, let me just give an example with Nigeria. Historically, we've had it with the Maters inner crisis.
Yes.
And currently, we're dealing with its manifestation in the form of Boko Haram crisis, the Jamaat al-Sinnah al-Da'wah al-Jihad, the ISWAF in the northwest, where like the Ansaru, and even the proscribed IPOP, the secessionists in the southeast. This is some of the manifestation of radicalization in Nigeria.
I'm glad that you mentioned an example that does not necessarily fit into the idea of radicalism that a lot of people have. You know, most people, when you hear radicalization, you immediately begin to think of Boko Haram, ISWAP, and all of that. But it can translate to other groups, just like the proscribed IPOP, like you said. How do these groups recruit new members? Is it a mental process, or Are there systematic ways that you think these things are being done?
Well, there is deliberate mobilization through propaganda and campaigns that lead to that psychosocial and cognitive alteration of the beliefs. And it is possible by manipulating some of the tendencies exhibited by man. Some people will exhibit like tribal tendencies, some political, some religious, and so they manipulate that tendency they have. This is how they are recruited.
Interesting. And now that we also have a lot of these groups using social media, yes, it seems
very easy that they can reach people from far and wide.
Yeah.
So it eases their works. Somebody who just from the comfort of his room will write what he think it is right, and in an effort to deliberately radicalize or recruit people into violent extremist group, and someone else from another world will just come and read it and he will agree with him. Then they will just start interaction online, so it goes on.
Interesting. Do you think social media helps to regulate a lot of these things, or is there more that needs to be done to regulate these campaigns by these groups?
Well, in the context of Northern Nigeria, the regulation is, or censorship is not that effective because the algorithm is not detecting some of the languages that they use. It's just common when you write in house on Facebook, you see the translation, you see how bad it is. So when people write in Hausa, the algorithm might not detect some of the elements of the messages that radicalizes or that extremist narrative. So it is not still very helpful, but I think with the efforts of the office of the NSA engaging some of these companies, a time will come when they will have a better algorithm that will detect some of the things.
Interesting. During the last episode here, you explained how poverty and economic inequality play into extremism. I'm wondering, is that also a relevant factor in the conversation around radicalization? Would it be easier, for example, to radicalize someone who already feels economically unequal in the society, who already feels marginalized and does not have much access to perhaps job opportunities?
Well, even if you cannot directly connect radicalization to poverty, but the kind of mind that that poverty allows man to grow can be used as a tool to radicalize him. Because the feeling of grievance, that can be manipulated around. It can be played around. The feeling of economic inequality, like he couldn't have access to, let's say, the national cake, as they say. So he can easily be radicalized along that line. So there is, even if it's not a direct connection, it has an indirect connection.
Interesting. So these are all factors that play into extremism, but also play into radicalism. Interesting. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, Malam Abdulsamad. I have just one last question. What measures do you think society or even the government can take towards combating radicalization?
Well, as with the extremism, it's two-way also, the state and the non-state efforts. And the state has to do all it can do to like ameliorate both the pull factors and the push factors that plays role in radicalizing people. The economy, the pillar of marginalization, the education, as well even as regulating the social media to detect some of those propaganda by the extremists. And the state also, the non-state actors also, like I called earlier, the religious authority and the community leaders, and also the youth who are more affected by this should cultivate a habit of looking at things critically, not just, and they should be alerting also the society, the elders in the society, the traditional institutions, so that the relevant authorities will come to note some of those problems. I think this is in summary what should be done.
That's very helpful and insightful. I hope it gets to the needed quarters. Thank you so much for sharing these insights,
Madam
Abdulsamad. This has been a very rich conversation. That concludes this episode of The Crisis Room. Join us next time as we continue to explore the latest crisis trends and answer the tough questions around them. This podcast episode was produced by Anthony Asimota, and our executive producer is Ahmad Salkia. I am Hawa, your host for today. Thank you for listening. For more episodes, visit www.humanangulmedia.com. See you next time.